Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Phineas Club, a show where we talk about the things that have been happening around the world with people from around the world. We get from the ground opinions and impressions, and we talk about all of it, and we listen to everyone else, and we try to form our understanding thanks to all of that. My name is Patrick Beja. I am originally from France, although if you want to go back further, I'm not from France, for those who know. And I'm currently living in Finland, and I'm very glad to be welcoming Franco back to the show, who is in France, but originally from Peru. How's it going, Franco?
Hello. In fact, I just finished my PhD thesis, so now I'm doing fine.
You just finished it. Did you get the grade, the result yet, or not yet?
No, I haven't defended it yet. It's in a month or in a whole month and a half. I just finished writing it.
That's a relief. What's the topic of your PhD?
Good question. Okay, so it's a long phrase. It's the optimization of the maintenance planning for military aircraft.
Wow, that is super specific. I guess that's what PhDs are.
The domain is operations research, which is the mathematical optimization in general. The application is the maintenance of a military aircraft, but it's really the topic is really a mathematical optimization and decision making.
So you managed to be both a kind of university educated liberal elite, because of the math and the studies, and kind of a conservative military person, because you apply it to aircraft, and I'm sure it's kind of a, you know, it has military applications.
Let's just say that last year I lived for 3 months on the US on a military university.
Wow!
So because in France I didn't. I did meet many people from the military, but not that much. But those 3 months last year were really into it, you know? I was immersed in the culture.
Does that mean that everyone hates you or that everyone loves you because you do like both sides of everything?
No, I think that just people understand that life is complex and they're just people which are weird and do everything at the same time.
I guess
kind of like the guy that is always saying like no but in conversations because I've been there too, you know. So if people complain about the military, say, you know, military are nice people. Like everyone I met, they're nice people.
People, you know, people understand that life is complex. We must not be meeting the same people. For the context, most people I meet on Twitter, so that might be why there is no nuance there. But thanks for being on, Franco. The other guest is back after a few months. It was, I think, in the spring. But Hannah Pearson is back from Malaysia. How's it going, Hannah?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the opposite. I mean, I just had a wisdom tooth out last week, so I'm slowly getting over that. Otherwise, I'm great.
So are you still feeling the effects of the happy gas or, you know, the thing they give you to pull it out?
Yeah, well, I was on some pretty strong painkillers, but those seem to have worn off now. So,
damn it. Couldn't you ask for a little more? You're like, you know, we're in 2020. I need a little bit more painkillers.
Can you give me like 4 months?
Yeah, well, I'm very curious to hear what's been happening in your corner of the world. I think we're going to start, although, you know, I'm a little bit... When you were on the show last, we talked about COVID, and it feels like every episode or every other episode has been about that topic. And it's not been super happy overall. And I feel we're going to be talking about that, but I would be remiss if we didn't at least mention the American presidential debate from yesterday, because it just happened. And at least in France and Finland, I've seen a lot of people talk about it, and not in glowing terms. And I think even American media is, I don't know if I can say depressed. Like, no one likes it. Not the Trump voters, not the Biden voters, not the independents, not the media, not the international press. Everyone is kind of like facepalming at the entirety of it. So I don't know if that's how it felt to you, Franco. I know, Hannah, you haven't really been following it. But yeah, Franco.
From what the question that I was asking me was, I was asking myself, was, isn't that the fault of the people that, you know, the people who handle the debate? I mean, if the debate goes wrong, isn't it the responsibility of the hosts? I don't know.
I mean
maybe they should have done a better job.
Conventional wisdom would say it's the responsibility of the moderator. But at some point, when there is at least one element that is going to screw everything up, like, if there are rules that you're supposed to follow, and maybe you can go over a little bit, but if you're just going to be monkeying about, like, there's only so much the moderator can do. Like, they can't physically go on stage and restrain the person, and they couldn't like mute the mic. You wouldn't do that. So I don't know.
Well, that's what they do in Congress, right? On parliaments, like when you talk too much and they have already warned you, sometimes they cut the mic out. Maybe they should have, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they should do rules. That. It could be helpful that to have those rules. I will say, however, one feeling that is pretty strong with me is the problem with this whole, the mood surrounding all of this is that everyone is facepalming, as I was saying, and going like, oh my God, this is embarrassing. And I've seen a lot of Americans saying this. But the problem is, it's just like it was in the previous American election, the chaos benefits Donald Trump, right? He messes everything so much that you end up not caring about any of it, and it kind of disadvantages the people who are a little bit more rational or make more sense, because then everything gets brought down to the level of confusing nonsense. And so since he's swimming in confusing nonsense, it's like, well, if everyone else is at that level, I create so much chaos that their strengths don't matter anymore compared to mine, and mine are a little bit of, you know, demagogical populism. But the countering of this is more rational thinking. And if you create so much chaos, the rational thinking doesn't matter, it can't be heard, then you're winning in a sense. Although I don't know, maybe that's a little bit too much in that debate, and maybe Biden is coming off as the adult. I don't know, but... Yeah.
That was my impression. Like it was a little more sensical what he was trying to say when he was even if he was interrupted. But I would say, like, yeah, of course, if you see that you're losing on the polls, you try desperate moves, and that's as desperate move as one can do, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know, the losing in the polls thing. I mean, I know that the polling companies and, you know, statistics agencies, whatever, are swearing that this time they are being more accurate, but I'm getting bad flashbacks of 4 years ago, you know? It was like, oh yeah, it's she's winning in the polls. It's got to be a cakewalk. And you're like, dude, you're like Anyway, all right. I don't want to spend the entire show on that, especially since we don't have an American on the show. But you know, this is
Actually, there's American. There's not one from the U.S. That's different. I'm willing to argue that all Latin Americans are Americans, and we shouldn't use Americans for people from the United States. But that's a whole other debate that I'm not. That maybe for another time.
Well, you know what? I would even argue that we are all a little bit Usans. We're all a little bit, Americans in the sense that the politics in the U.S. absolutely influence and disrupt the entire world even more now than before. So that's why we talk about it even when there isn't a use in how do you even say it if you don't say American? You created this, Franco.
Usanian? Well, in French, there's Etasunian.
Etasunian, Spanish, which sounds weird.
I use it actually. In Spanish, it's estadounidense.
Yeah.
So it's just the English that lacks the word, I guess.
Come on.
Well, okay. Anyway, so that was the point about that. But let's move on to the other things, which are, essentially what I was telling earlier. I know that, in Finland, we have some concern about COVID where cases are rising pretty fast, and certainly in the U.S., certainly in France, that is also a concern. I think in every country, we're testing a lot more, so maybe cases don't mean the same things than they did in the spring, but it's not like, the numbers aren't going down, right? Even if it's because you're testing more, the numbers are going up very clearly. Yeah. And I think we can come back to France and Finland, and maybe Peru even, in a little while. But I'm curious about Malaysia, and maybe if you have a view of wider things, Hannah, how is it going there? About COVID, or, if you want to talk about something else, please be my guest.
It's all just COVID over here. There's a bit of politics thrown in the mix in Malaysia as well, as always. But, it's pretty much COVID. I think feeling, at least in Malaysia, is that the worst is kind of over. We're not really into a kind of second wave as such. Our case numbers, they've never gone away. They've always been in the low, since about June or so, they've been in the low maybe 20s or 30s, going up, going down. Last week, they went up to about 150, so people started to get a little bit worried.
You mean new cases per day? Is that the metric?
New cases per day. Yeah. So maybe about 100, 150, and people started to get a bit worried last week. Generally, the feeling is that it is kind of under control. Malaysia and Southeast Asia are quite different in that our borders have remained really firmly closed. Europe, I know, has had summer, you've had all of these tourists traveling everywhere. No, that hasn't happened in Malaysia. Our borders have just been shut since March. Very limited people can go in, very, very limited people can come out. And so they've just controlled it like that. And it's really similar case across Southeast Asia. So countries like Thailand, again, they've had the borders closed. They don't really have any, they haven't had any case, locally transmitted cases for weeks now, I don't think. The only areas where it's a bit concerning are countries like Indonesia, the Philippines, and now Myanmar, where cases are really rising there. And those seem to be three countries, the situation isn't under control. Philippines has basically been under this super strict lockdown since March. And it's still kind of under this lockdown now. They haven't really eased it at all in Manila, in the capital. But Indonesia, they kind of eased it. And a couple of weeks ago, they had to put back restrictions again in Jakarta because things were just getting kind of out of hand. So it's kind of weird, within the region, there's this kind of two-speed. You've got like all these countries who are handling it pretty well. And then these other kind of struggling ones. But of course, the risk in Southeast Asia is, of course, that the healthcare system is not very robust, especially in countries like Indonesia, especially in Myanmar now. And there's really that risk that the healthcare system is just going to be overwhelmed. But generally, living in Malaysia, life is almost back to normal. You know, of course, yeah, there's the social distancing. Everybody has to wear masks, and outside it's law now. If you're in a crowded place, you've got to wear a mask. But, you know, it's not a big deal. It's not like I see the news in Europe and people protesting about having to wear masks and everything. It's completely different. In Southeast Asia, it's just accepted. It's just what you do. You just do it. You get on with it. No complaints. So it's kind of different to see that kind of narrative coming through of the European press about people, you know, protesting about this, because you just think, yeah, but that's just normal. And it's something that even before COVID, you know, even if a coworker got sick and they came into the office, they would wear a mask. Even before COVID, they would wear, you know, if they had like a cold, they would wear a mask. So it's not been a big leap, I don't think, to go from that to having to wear them all the time.
I wonder, so for a little bit of context, you're saying if it was a few dozen cases, new cases per day until a while ago, and then there was like 100 and 150. The population is 32 million, according to Wikipedia. So this is a really low, you know, per million count.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're doing good, yeah.
Yeah,
you're doing okay. I mean,
compared to the others, of course.
Yeah. I mean, the death rate in Malaysia, we've only had about 130 deaths total. You know, compared to other countries, it's like it's a cakewalk. It's
Wait until we come to Peru. Yeah, I mean, that statistic is really quick.
I wonder when you're talking about the other Southeastern Asia countries, when you're saying things are getting out of hand, do you have an idea of how... you know, to quantify that getting out of hand? Is it like thousands of new cases
It's interesting, actually, because isn't it? Because I'm taking everything from like the Southeast Asian perspective, where just a few, you know, a few hundred cases seems like a lot compared to Europe or the US. But in Indonesia and Philippines, it's been maybe a few thousand new cases per day.
Okay, well, that's still Myanmar, significant.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. And like Myanmar went from very, very few cases about a month ago to just, I think they crossed over 10,000 last week. So the speed of which that is increasing is really ramping up. And it's because, you know, a lot of it, they detected it inside these immigrant camps, the Rakhine state, the Rohingya Muslims there. And so, of course, when you're in these kind of camps, you know, there's very little sanitation anyway, so it is going to spread at a really high speed.
And that's the danger. It's so, you know, obviously, just like any other illness like that, the spread is exponential. As soon as your R naught is above one, you go, you know, within a couple of weeks, you can have a... I mean, the whole thing started probably with a handful of people getting it, and or initially one, but I mean, even coming to Europe or the US, it was a relatively low number of people, and then, you know, it spreads. That's the whole problem.
Yeah.
So even when you have a few dozen cases, you shouldn't completely rest on your laurel and stay vigilant. Okay. I'm also very curious. You mentioned, you know, the reports that you get from Europe about people protesting and all of this. In general, how do the population there, what do they think of all of this, of the way Western countries have been handling the pandemic?
Yeah, I think they think it's crazy. Really, I think they just look at it and then they just think, oh, what a mess. You know, and of course it's a difference between the way governments and the way countries are run as well. Of course, you know, Southeast Asia, you've got some dictatorships around here. You've got a lot more of a lot less of a democratic system than European countries. And people are a lot more used to doing what they're told. And then you compare that to Europe. I think people just think, especially with things like face masks and stuff, they just don't get it. They just don't understand what the issue is. You know?
Using them.
Sorry?
They don't understand what the issue, why it's such an issue to be told to wear a mask,
Exactly. Why it's such an issue to do that, or why it's such an issue to have to, you know, maybe download a tracking app and check in at every place that you're visiting. I mean, this is, you know, at least in Malaysia, that's been my daily life since April, since we were allowed out to the supermarket. Every time you go to the supermarket, get your temperature checked, check in with a QR code, even come home, have my temperature checked at the condo entrance.
Oh, really? It's just kind of even when you get in?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just what you do. Even my little son, you know, my toddler comes home from nursery, toddles up to the security guard, bends his forehead forward, waiting for the guard to take his temperature.
Amazing. It's just
daily life. Yeah.
It's funny. We do get the crazies in France, certainly. I don't think that's the case in Finland. You might have someone grumbling or not being very happy about the whole thing. But in France, we've gotten exactly the kind of thing we've seen in the US with people actually protesting and, you know, those viral videos of some idiot claiming that it is against their freedom and that it's, you know, a conspiracy to, yeah, like we have the exact same thing, the 3G, the Bill Gates, the 5G, the Bill Gates 5G, and the viruses that are going to get microchips into your blood. And that's the reason they created the pandemic and all of that crap. But the difference is, I think, with the US is at least, we've mentioned it a couple of times, this is not dignified by you know, the establishment, by the administration in any way. There is some, you know, unhappiness. Like, we're starting now, of course, to announce measures, restrictive measures, like restaurant bar closures and stuff like that. And there are a lot of people who are super unhappy about it and saying, oh, you're killing us and we can't do business and we're going to shut down. And which
it's amazing how even politicians, like I remember having read in Marseille, even politicians are against it. I mean, like at least you should align with the public policy, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. When I'm saying they are not dignified, it's a kind of crazy conspiracy theory.
No,
right?
Yeah, like of course, yeah.
You're right. There's certainly a feeling that it is difficult to get all your ducks in a row for the like, because obviously it's not the same part of the government. You have the government, the central government, and you have the local mayorships and that kind of thing. Yeah. And they feel like they weren't consulted, which, again, I can understand. But I don't know. To me, it's like, this is like a war, you know, like this is something that is very, very serious. And the argument is, oh, well, because we're testing more, we're seeing more cases, but hospitals are fine. And so we should like keep everything open and wait until things collapse. And the very frustrating thing is that a few months ago, people were saying, oh, the government didn't do enough and didn't do quickly enough. And
of course, yeah, I think that it's partly politics in the sense that a mayor is going to say, no, we shouldn't do this in my town, even if they know that they're going to do it, because then since they were going to do it anyway, they will at least win the people that are both sides, you know, because they'll say, I know we were against it, even though it helped. No, right. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it's easy to complain when you don't have the means to decide. I don't know.
When you're not the one who has to make the decision.
Of course, exactly. Yeah. And either way, there's going to be people against it.
Yeah, I think
even in France and Spain, people are complaining that we should have acted sooner. At the same time, that people are complaining that we should not be so I don't know, right-handed, so strong with the action. So it's like you can never win taking this kind of decisions.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
That's the big problem, I think. It's not, you know, people is a very dangerous word to use because it confuses everything. If you say people want this and then people want that, it's you start thinking that nothing makes sense and that whatever you say, it doesn't matter. The reality is it's not people who say this and then the opposite. It's that there's always some people will be opposed to what you do. So when you take measure X, then some people will not like measure X and they will get their voice heard, especially, you know, with the internet today. And then a few months later, you take measure versus X, opposite X, you do the opposite or you correct what you were doing, and some other people are going to be complaining about. I honestly do not envy the role of people in government, Because whatever you do, there are going to be some very angry people who are going to be telling you that you're messing up.
Sometimes it's the same people that complain both ways.
Maybe that, yes, that happens too.
In my experience.
It might be. Hannah, you wanted to say something?
No. I was just going to say, I mean, the only thing, well, you see it also coming into play is elections. I mean, yeah, you've got the US one, but, you know, even countries like New Zealand or other countries, everybody's, the prime ministers or the presidents, they don't want to take big decisions about things like border openings. They're all just hanging on because they don't want to screw up their chances of winning the election. And that makes me a bit mad as well, that people are kind of putting that kind of consideration they need to win ahead of, you know, what might actually be best for the country.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that of all the countries, fairly or unfairly, we all look at whether or not we're happy with the way things are in our country. We look at the US and think, at least we're not that, right?
Yeah. Well, wait till we get to Peru again. I mean,
okay.
I don't know if you're following the news. I guess not. But
no, yeah. I'm not. Okay, so can you tell us how things feel on the ground in France before we move on to Peru?
Yeah. So in general, I would say, well, until recently, things were pretty normal. I mean, not in my case. I haven't been going out too much or seeing friends, but I was invited and friends have been gathering. People have been going to restaurants.
Which is why we're getting a second wave now, because people have been, well, like the summer was normal. I definitely feel like the summer was kind of almost normal.
Yeah, I think that people thought, as long as you're careful, I mean, and I think that even if you're careful, it still happens. I mean, there's a part of a risk you can mitigate by being careful, wearing a mask. I mean, most people I know wear a mask, and most people I see wear a mask also. Now it's mandatory, but even when it wasn't. But even there, there's a lot of risks that you can only mitigate if you don't do such a thing. If you don't, if you don't go to the gym, I don't know if gyms were still open, or to the restaurant, and if you don't see friends. And I think that since the risk is hard to measure in that way, people thought, no, as long as we follow the guidelines, we'll be okay. But I think that it wasn't the case. Just things don't work like that. You should have maybe relying on people again, on citizens to take it easy. It doesn't really work.
Yeah. And just to give, again, a little bit of context, in France, we're getting the number of cases, again, more testing, et cetera, et cetera. But the latest highest spike, which I think cases are being reported every few days, so it's very spiky. But the highest spike was 16,000 on September 24th. And it goes between 5 and 15,000 or so. And the spikes are amplifying. This is not the highest number that we had during the spring was 7,500. So it is not something that you shouldn't take seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
To give an example, because I like at least giving concrete examples, because that way I think gives you a little better picture. I recently had to do a presentation for my doctoral school to all the. It was like a meeting for the doctoral school that was supposed to have taken place in March, but of course they postponed it indefinitely. And they finally decided that it was going to take place, I don't know, if like 3 weeks ago. And of course, I was thinking, is it really necessary? I mean, it's not as if, I mean, it's good to see other PhD students, I guess, and to present your work. But in my opinion, it wasn't necessary in the first place. And second, you could have done it virtually. I mean, it takes a little of the feeling from it, but you can still make it digital, electronically. But they decided to do in presence in the university, and of course they took the measures, right? So you couldn't sit next to the one person. It was every one place. It was an empty space. You had to wear a mask all the time. but you had to use a microphone, for example, that you had to wash and clean after you speak, mm-hmm. after you spoke. But, you know, and so, of course, I cannot say that someone was contaminated at that point or someone was contagious, but you never know. And that those kind of events, I guess, repeat often enough for something to go wrong, right?
Yeah.
And the last thing that happened before I left was that the director of the talk, the organizer, was behind me and was coughing. I was like, really?
No. Oh, no.
I mean, it could be a cold, of course, but yeah, yeah. Who knows, right? Even with a mask. I don't know.
I will say the number of deaths is still very low, and hopefully it won't spike. But the number of deaths, which is the really, really important thing if you want to get down to it, is still very low. I mean, in the U.S. In the U.S., it's spiking to about 1,000 per day, and then going down then because of the way things are reported. In France, it's still in the under 100. So it's relatively low, and it's going down even more. And in Finland, it's even lower. Like, the cases are, like, now it's spiking, and it's at about, I don't know, 100 and 150. And the number of deaths is, like, 2 per day, max. And usually it's 0. So in Finland, it's still very, you know, we're still very, very good. But I think the feeling of a lot of people, although, again, in Finland, it's getting higher in the number of cases. And so people are we're taking preventive measures. We're shutting down parts of the bars and stuff like that. I will say, maybe it's just me, but the feeling in general is, okay, let's just get through this last stretch of this last fall and winter. And then in 6 months or so, we'll have serious vaccine candidates. And of course, initially, it's going to be like, don't think when you get the vaccines available, it's going to be, oh, everything's good in a week. Like, it will take months and months and months to vaccinate everyone. So initially, it's going to be people that are at risk and healthcare personnel and all of that. And then that's going to take months. But then, you know, hopefully by summer, end of summer, we'll have enough people vaccinated that will be good. But we still need, like, it's not over. We still need to get through that fall and winter. And yes, there are more people being tested. And yes, there are less people dying, probably maybe because there's a weaker strain or whatever, or people who are sick are younger, so they're dying less. But it's still serious. I know. Okay. Anyway.
People should, I guess, people should always think, maybe I should take it more seriously than I'm taking it right now. Like,
I mean, if you take it more seriously than you should,
have to keep in your, I mean, I think nobody should think maybe I'm being too paranoid. I think people are being too little paranoid, at least.
If you're being too careful, then the thing that happens, the bad thing that happens, is that you die less. And, you know, the economy is maybe going to take a hit, but you die less. If you're being not careful enough, then you die more. So which extreme do you want to go to? It's like, I also understand that, you know, there is such a thing as being too careful and then hurting the economy, which in turn is really, really bad, especially in the US where they don't have social safety nets. But still, anyway.
Yeah, you can spend all your money from your house. You don't need to go out of your house and spend it all, I guess.
Of course, restaurants and bars do suffer, and retail stores, and there is a real impact on the economy. I'm not trying to say there isn't. But is that a concern? Although I was going to say, is that a concern in Southeast Asia? But in Malaysia, everything is normal, so you don't really even have that.
No, well, worry. I mean, the economy is still taking a big hit, like. Malaysia's in recession now. Most of Southeast Asia is in recession. I mean, and for me personally, I'm in the tourism industry.
Yeah.
So that's just completely shot right now. And, you know, countries like Thailand, yeah, you can do domestic tourism, but it's only so far that that can go. You know, there was a headline out the other week, and it said like 1 million hotel workers are redundant. In Indonesia, it's something like 13 million tourism workers are out of work. So, yeah, that's why, I mean, especially in countries like Indonesia, where they are kind of doing this lockdown on and off, on and off. It's just because they're trying to get that balance. Like you're saying, it's between that, you know, not killing the economy, and not killing people. And what is the right balance in a country that can't afford to have really big social security nets? And I don't think they've quite worked out the right balance yet. But probably whatever you choose is the wrong one, right?
Yeah, it's funny because when we talk about balance, all of a sudden everyone starts talking about Sweden, where there was no heavy restrictions. And I can tell you during the spring, it was not a fun time for Sweden. But the thing that everyone forgets is that, yes, there aren't any mandatory restrictions, but they do, quote unquote, recommend social distancing and mask wearing and remote working. And people do it because they're not dumb, you know, or not too dumb. Yeah.
Probably it's social pressure, I would say. There's enough social pressure not to have like law enforcing measures.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not like they're not, it's not like, because I know some people look at it and say, oh, we should do the same thing and it works out for them. But it works out because they follow the recommendations and they do the things that you don't want to do. And then, you know, take them as an example of, oh, we don't have to do it. No. They do it. That's why it's working out. So, yeah, and now they're at like zero deaths per day, like 1, 2, 4, 1. So tell us about Peru and what's happening there.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to even start. You know, okay. So last time I was in the show. Last time I talked, I think it was around February or March, and I think COVID was starting in Europe. It was already here, and we're seeing more and more countries. And I think Peru had not a single case at that moment. So a long way has happened, and the other thing I remember having discussed was that I was starting a startup based on people traveling and delivering clothes. So two things that have definitely changed things.
that
I mean, in March, little after Europe started the lockdown, Peru, with the very little cases, started the strictest lockdown in Latin America, and one of the strictest lockdowns in the world at that moment. It was end of March, I think, and it lasted several months. But when I say several, like 4 months or so.
Okay.
And the government really took it seriously. And every day, the president gave a speech at noon about things that we're doing, the status, the statistics, and everyone's stockpile on masks immediately. It was not as in Europe where we were arguing if we needed masks or not, if there were enough masks, etc. No, in Peru, nobody even asked. They just went to the store and bought all the masks they could.
Okay. So far, it's sounding like everything's going perfectly. I don't know what you're worried about.
Okay, you know, I mean, I'm trying to say what's the good statistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just say that Peru, as of now, it's the country who has the most death per habitant in the world.
Oh, wow.
It's the worst country. I mean,
so what happened between March and now?
Well, it's the thing, and I think I need to go back to what we were discussing just now about what the difference between law and behavior. In Sweden, there's no law, but there's social pressure and there's the behavior of people that changes even if there's no strict law about that enforces this. And of course, that's one thing. In Peru, the government may take good decisions or may take, you know, wise choices, but at the end, it has no power over the country in the sense that there's not enough policemen. There's not enough. Even they put the military to try to control the lockdown, and it's a thing that the state is too small with respect to the population and the economy. And so it's impossible to enforce. I mean, it's not only policemen, but also hospitals. Hospitals are not prepared, like in Europe. They're not, there's like, I don't know, if you take the statistic of medics for each 100,000 population, we're probably 10% of the Europe statistics. So in a way, the country is not prepared for a pandemic. And and I'm talking about Peru, but it's probably more or less the same around the whole region. We weren't even prepared. I mean, and it's not because we didn't do our homework. It's just that we're not rich enough, and we don't have the institutions and you know, for example, things like in Europe, you could say, okay, we pay unemployment to people that are not working or partially not working. In Peru, they even had the money to do it, but there's so many people that work informally that and don't have a bank account that you cannot even get the money to the people. Mm. At some point, even the good intentions turned into bad intentions. They tried to deliver money to people in rural places or people in the jungle. And while delivering the money, they infected the people in town. So, oh, you know, I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong. I mean, and as a result, we had like a couple of months ago at 200 deaths per day, like for months. I mean, it was a statistic or between 100 and 200, closer to 200 per day. I mean, it was disastrous. I mean, and as I said, everyone wears a mask and has been wearing a mask, and everyone's aware that the dangers, but it's just that most of the economy is face to face. There's remote working, of course. It works for people that can allow to have that have a computer, that can stay in their houses and still do their work. But for others, for most people, they have to go to the markets. And most markets were, I don't know, like they tested the specific markets, for example, in Lima. And it was like 80% of the people that the salesmen were had the virus.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, it just outrun the institutions, the hospitals, the medical system, everything. I mean, it's just that you cannot do anything at some point. I mean, at some point they just said we'll have to take out the lockdown because now the economy is going down, and it's in Latin America in general, and everything that I'm saying more or less applies to most countries in Latin America, especially Colombia, Chile, more or less, and especially Brazil. Also, they're having a really bad, pandemic.
Looking at the statistics, South America is definitely in the top of number of cases per million and number of deaths per million. There's Peru, Bolivia, Brazil, Ecuador, Chile.
If I heard correctly, Malaysia had 30 million people, or is it a lot more? Because then it's more or less the same population as Peru, so you have an idea, and you're having between 100 and 150 cases per day. And right now, hopefully the statistics have been going down a little bit recently. But I think we have the same number, but in deaths, like 100 deaths. I mean, nobody's happy about it, but at least it's less bad than before. It's really crazy, and so you have an idea of how people take it seriously. I have, of course, friends with whom I speak frequently, and I know at least two of them that didn't leave their house for like 4 months. Didn't leave; they stayed in their own houses.
I mean, when you have 4 months. When you have that kind of structure, that means it's very difficult to contain the spread. I can understand, like, it definitely in Finland and to an extent even in France, at depending on the time, it's like, okay, if I have to go out, it's, and I take precautions, I'm probably okay, right? Even though my mom was taking all the precautions in the world and she still got it, but you know, you're probably gonna be okay. But it seems like, the way you're describing it in Peru, depending on where you live, you don't want to take the risk.
For example, my parents usually live in Lima, but they have a farm on the south. They didn't step took a step on Lima for 6 months or 5 months. They just, because Lima was by far the worst place, right? And yeah, it's, and you know, for some specific context, like the company I have in Spain gave a, you know, gave a share a video with people in general to say, hey, we're willing to help and do what we do to help in decision making for people that need it because of the pandemic. And we ended up in contact with the hospital, two hospitals in Peru with whom we were working. I mean, pro bono, right? Of course. Mm-hmm. And helping them with and this was like at the beginning of the pandemic. And their worry, which is still, I guess, worrying right now, is, okay, yeah, the pandemic is happening and there's nothing we can do. We can prepare, but we have a limited number of beds and that's it. There's not other things we can do. What you need to help us, they said, is with the post-confinement, post-lockdown, we need to be able to start again treating all the people that we haven't been treating because of the lockdown.
And, because everything and is delayed, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, childbirth, they said, that happens. Definitely. I mean, that you cannot stop.
Yes, that you cannot delay.
Exactly. They come and we still treat them and we have to, you know, keep that separated from the rest and everything, of course. But vaccinations, for example, they had a huge list of vaccinations for children. And I guess this applies everywhere, but I don't know. For me, in Peru, it's always worse. And you have this, these specific ages at which you have to take a vaccine because then it doesn't work or it works less well. I don't know. And so you have a schedule and you have to give them vaccines, you know, on top of all the, you know, chronic people that need medicine for their specific illness and that, well, sometimes you can ship them the medicine, et cetera, but sometimes you have to, you know, you have to be in contact with the people to vaccinate or to give specific things. And all of these things have been getting delayed all the time. And yeah, it's another issue on top, you know, because it's people die not only because of COVID, which is already huge and very bad, but also because they don't get the vaccine or they don't get the other thing.
Yeah, I think that bit is often forgotten actually by people, isn't it? You know, especially now when people say, oh, is it really that serious? You know, it's like I'm going to die from it. But say, yeah, you might not die from COVID, but other people are going to die from the things that they can't get treated in hospital for that are un-COVID related.
Yeah, and it's always like there is still, like, we're not, things are changing all the time. We're not sure. That's just how science works, right? You encounter something new and you try and you make hypotheses and then you verify them and then you're wrong and you change it. And so there are things that we don't know, but it doesn't mean you should assume that the thing that is the most, you know, that fits what you would like reality to be is the truth. Like, we would all like for it to be not so bad and not affect people. And maybe that's going to be the case, but we can't assume. I don't know. Do you have, because now, again, maybe it's me because things are relatively quiet in Finland and I'm thinking about vaccines already. I know that in France, you do have the crazy anti-vax people, who are saying, oh, I don't want that. Not even necessarily the crazy conspiracy theory people who think, you know, the nano 5G thing, chips are going to be injected in them through vaccines. Not those, but people who don't want to get vaccinated because they're another, you know, kind of crazy. But I don't think it's going to be like a huge issue, hopefully. They exist because I guess they exist everywhere, but I don't think it's
amazing. It's amazing how in France, it's one of the worst in Europe. I mean, in Western Europe, they have the statistic I saw recently. We have the least, the smaller percentage of people that trust vaccines in general. Mm.
Yeah. I have no idea. How is it in maybe Peru?
Yeah. Good question. Probably there's anti-vaxxers everywhere, but it's not huge. I mean, it's not, I would say that one thing that there exists and that exists in Peru, it's a complete lack of trust on the government. And that's, well, at the same time, sad and very unpractical, especially when you need to take note of what the government's saying, and especially when the government says things that make sense. So,
which does happen, contrary to popular American culture.
Exactly. Sometimes in Peru, it doesn't happen. And there's a reason for distrust, right? I mean, I could go on into the political problems. We almost lost our president 2 weeks ago.
Lost like in the mall or?
and as a reminder, this is the president. This was the vice president, because the president was, I don't know how to say, vacated when they kicked him out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he renounced. He resigned the last president, and the vice president took over. And this is the vice president, which is now president. And the Congress wanted to kick him out because of moral incapacity,
which is like promising.
You maybe did something that is can be or not corruption. We're not sure, but we want to kick you either way.
Okay.
Before anything, you know, before the investigation takes place, just in case.
But right? Did he pay more than $750 in taxes? That's okay. Sorry, that was cheap.
Well, at least we didn't. I mean, it's not that the president is like a genius, but he's at least more or less he's not bad. So I think it was a good thing that he stayed. And you don't want to change the president in the middle of a pandemic, even
yes,
if the
that
pandemic
is probably is not a good idea. That's fair.
And and last thing, the people that wanted to kick him out were people that were already being investigated for corruption and illicit things, you know, because that's the country we have. But yeah.
You know what really depresses me in that conversation is the fact that once we do get the vaccines, obviously countries like Peru that really need it, because it's not even a matter of observing the right measures, they're not going to be the first ones to get it. I mean, I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe things are going to work out, but I don't know.
Sorry, I lost the last 5 seconds because a call.
Oh, I was saying probably the countries that get it first, the vaccine, are not going to be the countries that need it most, like Peru, like Bolivia, like Brazil, where the problem is the structural makeup of the country that is conducive to the spread of the pandemic. And in countries where we can mitigate it a little bit more, we're going to be getting it first. Although I say that, when it's available for me, of course, I will wait for my turn, because I think there are other people that need it more, like healthcare professionals and stuff like that. But when it's available for me, obviously, I will go get it. I won't say, oh, no, I don't need it. I'm okay. So, okay. All right. Well, I think that's enough depressing stuff for today. There's kind of I feel like we're resigned to all of it a little bit. It's like, okay, it's frustrating, but there's nothing we can do, kind of. I don't know.
I would say resigned is good. I'm okay with people being resigned and then following, you know, the
the guidelines. Yeah. Following the guidelines, sure. Sure. The people who are not okay are the people who are not resigned and who are going against the guidelines because, you know, they just want to, the people who kill me the most are the ones who wear the mask under the nose. It's even worse than not wearing a mask at all, I feel. Is there, Hannah, anything other than COVID happening either in Malaysia or Southeast Asia with which we can end the show? Or is that really just everything COVID?
Nothing uplifting, no.
Okay.
Political machinations in Malaysia. Yeah, maybe we'll have another snap election. Who knows?
Okay. All right. Franco, anything? I'm trying to think, is there anything in Finland that's happening that is... in Finland, we've had a fantastic end of September where we had essentially an Indian summer, and it never happens in Finland. We've had like 20 degrees Celsius for a couple of days now, 3-4 days, with wonderful sunny weather. We went out by the harbor restaurant and we had some food and the little one was running around. It was amazing. Except, of course, this is possible because of climate change. And it means that there are But, you know, southern Finland, the only problem is it's really cold in winter. But with climate change, there are going to be winters might be colder, which, you know, it's already cold, so whatever. But summers might be warmer and last longer. So we're in the right place for this inevitable, you know, catastrophe. So that's positive.
I don't have anything. I mean, only small bit of news was that yesterday, for some reason that nobody explains, in Peru, the sea at some where my parents live just backed up 200 meters, and nobody knows why. That's just random news.
Okay, that's the last thing we need in 2020. Like the hidden people of Atlantis shifting the tectonic plates and rising up to conquer us. That would be the last thing that would, you know, the cherry on top of 2020. That is really concerning, though. Like, this is usually when there's a underground earthquake, right? That happens, and then you have a tsunami that follows. Although I'm guessing,
I think
it didn't
follow. you first have the earthquake, and then you have the sea that goes back, and then you have the tsunami.
Yeah,
but we didn't have the earthquake, so at least we know that's not it. So I don't know. Okay. It's just, I don't know, random things.
Okay,
we can say it's climate change too. Let's, I don't know.
Everything is climate change. All right. Well, thank you both of you for spending a little bit of time with me and kind of commiserating in that despair, resigned despair that we have. But as I'm saying, the one good thing I think is vaccines are getting, you know, studied and how's it called? Phase 3. And we're going to get them hopefully within 6 months or so. They're going to start appearing. And hopefully this is the last summer, the last winter for this pandemic. When pandemic 2 comes around, it will be another story. But for this one, we should be looking over the horizon towards the end of it, hopefully. Thank you very much, Hannah and Franco. Do you have a Twitter account that you want to promote or anything else that you do? Hannah, first of all, if people want to go ahead and travel. No, maybe not. Tourism.
No.
Excellent.
No, I'm on Twitter, but I don't really use it. But you can find me on LinkedIn, hannah.f.pearson. So go ahead. I'll accept any connection request.
Fantastic. We will put the link in the show notes. Franco.
Well, yeah, since I also have a LinkedIn account, so maybe I just put my account too, Franco Pesquiera, in case anyone wants, I don't know, you know, some mathematician solving some complex optimization problem. Who knows?
Sometimes
it happens.
We'll do that. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I am also hosting a gaming show called Pixels. If you know what? Here is the positive things. It's gaming. The month of September for gaming was insane, like super exciting stuff happening. So if you're looking for a little bit of escapism, Pixels is a show that you can listen to. I summarize everything and explain and analyze everything that happened in September in the latest episode. It's available at notpatrick.com. It's a fantastic site where you'll find links to everything I do, or you just look for Pixels in your podcast app. Or if you want to support what we do here, you can also support the show, the Phileas Club, on Patreon. Patreon.com/the Phileas Club is where you go. You can pledge and support and help us doing a little bit of, you know, trying to actually talk to people from different parts of the world and hearing from them instead of hearing from journalists who kind of know what they're talking about and report on maybe what's happening there. Here you get an understanding of what is actually happening. That you can support at patreon.com/thephileasclub, and the link is in the show notes. If everything goes well or poorly, the next episode should be a return to the Brexit saga with hopefully the same protagonists, which, yeah, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it's certainly going to be interesting. So in a couple of weeks, we should be doing that.
Just as COVID, it never ends.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm over here in Southeast Asia, that's all.
You can hear the despair in Hannah's voice.
Yeah, oh my God, please, no Brexit.
Oh, well, that boat has sailed. That train has left the station, Hannah. I don't know if you're aware, but...
I'm in denial. It's still not going to happen.
Well, news on that in a couple of weeks on this show. And until then, I bid all of you farewell and send many good feelings and hugs your way, whoever you are, wherever you might be. Talk to you soon. Bye.